Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today is a unique sort of episode. I don't believe we've done one of these before, but then again, we've done over 300 episodes, so I might be mistaken on that. We're doing a Q&A. Benny has selected a series of questions that have been left on, or comments that have been left on our YouTube channel. And I would encourage many of you guys to go over there and listen to the podcast on the YouTube channel. I mean, you get to see Benny's face, my face. We're not much to look at, but, you know, it's good to feel that authenticity, that passion that we have for what it is that we're talking about. So in any case, we've gone ahead and compiled the list of questions. I don't know what those questions are. Benny's going to pop them up at me, and I am going to respond. I'm sure some of them are going to be toxic because, as you all know, on the internet, there are some folks out there who like to throw spears and daggers and knives, and it's part of what makes the internet fun and not so fun at the same time. So I hope you enjoy. It's going to be really quick today with respect to the ads. Go to 343coaching.com if you are a coach. We've got free and premium programs for you there. You don't want to miss it. We've had thousands of coaches go through the program and catapult their careers, catapult their teams, catapult their individual players to levels that would not have been possible. And I've said that a million times, and I'll keep repeating it here. And parents, go to 343masterclass.com. The program is open for enrollment. You can just go over there, click on a button, get on board, and get a bunch of great guidance from us who have been in the game for a very long time. We've seen, countless cycles of players from the ages of 9 years of age up to and including their professional trajectory. So we've been there, done that, and we've codified so many of the valuable lessons that parents should know in order for them to guide their kids in a much, much better way. And as opposed to, a trial and error sort of thing, which you definitely don't want to do with kids, right? Because before you know it, they've ended their soccer careers, and you reflect and you look back and you're like, man, if I only knew these sets of things before my kid turned 10 or before they turned 13 or before they turned 18, they would be in a much better position today. So that is what we were attempting to do over there with the 343 Masterclass program. So head on over. And for you coaches who are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, go to 7v7coaching.com. All right. Here we go, Q&A with Benny Rogers.
We mentioned at the end of the last podcast that today would kind of be going through the comments episode, if you're still cool with that.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with it. I had actually given that some thought, and I know plenty of people that actually do that, and it's a really good episode, it turns out. Let's roll with that then.
You're pretty good at on-the-fly stuff.
Come on. All right, man.
You don't even prepare for any of the episode. This will be good.
Let's give it a go and keep that statement in this episode too, because folks might be thinking, oh, I'm here preparing. Like, these are all the talking points, like zero, just completely freewheeling, freeballing it.
Yeah. Well, I like it, Gary. This is the last episode of the year for 343. So happy New Year. This one should be posted on New Year's Eve. When you're listening to this, it should be New Year's Eve.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So let's get all the toxic comments out of the way. Have a fresh start January 1st.
I like that. Well, some of them are good. And also too, I appreciate there's people who are constantly posting, positive feedback, meaning that they're listening to every single episode. So, we got to give some shout outs there too. Let's start with a comment from CyberX Shinobi. This guy's always commenting on our posts. He has two questions. Number one, what is the difference in your opinion between MLS, USL, and Liga MX products? And number two, what do you believe are the requirements for a kid to play up in age groups? Is it better to play lower level competition and age up, or play the highest level of competition in your age group?
Yeah, let's take it one at a time because okay. My brain's not that great. I'm going to do the first one, MLS, USL, Liga MX, difference in the players that they produce. Is that what they're saying? Something to that effect?
Yeah, well, he says products. That's the word that he uses. And just so you know which episode he's referencing, this is from our latest episode on pickup soccer.
Got it. I am going to presume they're talking about players when they say products. Yeah. So first and foremost, I'm going to say that the preponderance of all professional players are not produced by leagues. Okay. They are produced more so than by leagues, by clubs. And many a times it's not the clubs that produce the players, but it is the coaches at the youth level that produce the players. And sometimes it's not even the coaches that produce the players. It's their environment outside of the structured club that produce the players. And sometimes it's even less of an effect there. And it's the parents who produce the players. And that's why many a times you'll see professional players having parents who were professional players. And so I think it's already an issue framing the question from a league perspective. The leagues are the least responsible for producing players. So with that having been said, it's kind of hard to answer the question out the gate as to what the difference between MLS, USL, Liga MX's products are. But I'll take a stab at what I think the difference in the players are from those leagues. So Liga MX, I think in general, the players are better from the domestic sense. Okay, meaning the Mexicans that are in Liga MX. So let's leave the foreigners to the side for a moment. And that comes as a consequence of a lot of culture that is aligned with good player development. The culture of the club, the culture of the coaches, the culture of the parents, the culture of the entire ecosystem and environment. So their products are better. Second place, I would say, is probably MLS. If we're thinking about the Americans who happen to survive the landfill of American soccer and get to that point, because obviously MLS is the first division in our country and they get the pick of the litter versus USL, who has to get not the pick of the litter. They don't get, you know, the top prospects in the country. They don't get the youth national team guys, because if you're on the youth national team, MLS is going to come and scoop you up if you aren't already scooped up. And there's this sort of vicious slash virtuous cycle that happens with MLS and the youth national teams, in the sense that, like, US soccer has been taken over by MLS. And so US soccer basically picks MLS academy players to be on the youth national teams. And they kind of turn a blind eye to everything and everyone else. And I hope nobody comes in the comments or anyone, oh, well, what about this player and that player and that player? Guys, don't pick out the little exceptions to the rule where maybe there's a token USL kid, or maybe there's a token youth club kid who's not even in an MLS academy or USL academy at all. That is few and far between and is not the general rule. So I guess that's the long-winded way of saying, Ben, that Liga MX's products are better than MLS and MLS is better than USL. I don't know what they wanted me to answer.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Gary. Do you think, like, if a player goes to USL, is that pretty much the highest ceiling that they're ever going to get to? I'm sure there's a few outlier cases. So I guess I should say older players. Like, if you're 23, 24, and you get transferred to USL, is your career over or can you still make the jump?
So I like talking about the general rules, and the general rule is, yes, their career's over. If you are 23, 24, and you are now hopping into USL, I mean, come on, let's be realistic. Like, where are you going to go from there? Unless somehow you score 40 goals in the season or 50 goals in the season or something, and MLS team or some overseas team is willing to give you a chance, then okay. But I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, if you're 16, 17, 18, 20, and you're playing USL, I think there is a pipeline to get you to the next level, because now you are very, very young, playing with adult men's in a professional environment. And if you perform exceptionally well, then that attracts attention, Ben. And it's also easier to sell you and market you to the next higher level. Hey, look, I have an 18-year-old who just is crushing it in the second division in the United States. You know, let's give this guy a chance. And there's no reason why a reserve team in Europe or a second division team in Europe or maybe, but unlikely, a first division team in Europe will give you a shot, or MLS as well. And it's happened many a times. You know, you can look at, you know, now Diego Luna is all the rage at RSL, who started at El Paso Locomotive when he was a teen and did very well there. And he was given an opportunity, and then he was given another opportunity with actual playing time in RSL. We can talk about why those opportunities now exist versus why they never existed in the past. And the kid is doing very well. And actually, I would encourage a lot of parents who are listening out there and players that the USL pathway, when you're very young, is a very attractive one and could be recommended, frankly, Ben, because if you're 17, what are the chances that you are going to be given a lot of opportunities in Major League Soccer? Again, guys, don't come at me and say, oh, well, look at this kid at the Philadelphia Union, or look at that kid in the New York Red Bulls. Guys, don't pick out to me the exceptions to the rule, which, by the way, you don't even know why they were made an exception. They literally were elevated intentionally for non-soccer reasons. But the rule is you aren't going to play, okay? And especially it's position dependent. If you are a attacking midfielder, central midfielder, or an attacking winger or something of that nature, MLS by and far gets the foreigners for those positions, the seasoned foreigner, or even the youth foreigner with a lot of resale value and potential, you're in big trouble. Now, if you're a center back or an outside back or something like that, you know, MLS doesn't really emphasize getting top tier talent for those positions. They don't splurge there. So yeah, maybe an academy kid will be given some opportunity. So I don't know. I can talk forever, as you can tell about this, Ben. But yeah, USL, your career is not over. It's actually very bright if you're very young. But once you're like 23, 24, if you're playing USL, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but ooh, that's a rough one, man.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a good segue into his next question is that what do you believe are the requirements for a kid to play up in age groups? Is it better to play lower level competition in age up, or is it better to play the highest level of competition in your age group? I think he's more talking about younger players at this point.
Yeah, I would say playing up is always preferred if you're going to be giving a good number of opportunities. So that means if your playing time is not going to be hugely impacted by playing up, you should play up because you're going to be more and more challenged. Should you play up all the time? That I'm not so sure, because sometimes it's great to have a youth player be super successful and do whatever the hell they want. It's great if the player is able to dribble by five guys, shoot on goal, and celebrate. You know, that's also awesome, an awesome feeling. It's a confidence booster and it's a development booster because you can experiment and try a whole bunch of different things, like how we talked about in pickup games last episode. But you can't be doing that all the time. You need to be challenged. You need to be exposed. You need to be yourself bullied. So playing up would be the preferred method. And I think you see that all over the world, and including with Brian's teams, who kind of pioneered the charge of playing up. If I'm being honest, that's the way to develop first and foremost. Right. That's what happens.
In my perspective, something that I see a lot at the younger ages is like, okay, let's say there is a top level flight one 2015 player, right? And then they'll send him to play with the 2014s, but they're playing against like flight threes. So meaning that this kid is still like taking it through the other team and is able to do whatever he wants on the field, basically. So from that perspective, I mean, he probably would be able to, you know, compete against the flight two. And is he going to struggle a little bit? Maybe, but I think it'll be beneficial for him in the long run. And like you mentioned, Brian's team, the guy that comes to mind for me is, right, Efra. I mean, at one point he was playing, what was it, Gary, 3 years up or 4 years up? And there's some games of Brian that are recorded and you hear them saying at halftime, like, hey, listen, like the team is way too big, fast and strong for Efra, but he's still able to pick out these line-breaking passes. And so there is moments for him to develop. But in some games, he's just like absolutely useless. You know what I'm saying?
100%, man. And for the parents, you should, I don't know, be low time preference, as they say in economics, which is don't react with what's happening on the weekend immediately. You know, look at the long view, have the long view. So even if you're a very talented player is invited to play up or is playing up and they aren't the star or they are, or they're being benched, you know, a lot, or I don't want to be offensive, right? Don't overreact, maybe is the right word, and just let the kid, you know, work it out. Let the kid experience what it's like being on the bench. It's a good thing for them.
Right. Yeah. And I think what you mentioned too is like, are they going to get ample opportunities to play, or is it just going to be, you know, them sitting on the bench every single game?
For sure. For sure. I mean, you have to play at least sometime, right? Don't go an entire season and get 10 minutes the entire season. Obviously, that's a terrible situation. But if you're going the entire season and you're getting half games, you know, or maybe a good number of starts, but, you know, sometimes you're just coming off the bench, that's fine.
I mean, and yeah, and that's the beauty, like we talked about in the last episode, that's the beauty of pickup street soccer, right? You got kids playing against players that are 6, 7, 8 years older than them. And in some ways, getting bullied on the field can be a good thing, can be a positive thing, because it makes you tougher.
Yeah, and I get it, man. The challenge also is, from a parent's perspective, is how do you know whether who you're entrusting your kid to is the right one? Because what we're saying is all true and theoretically true, but it could be the situation that you're under the tutelage or the mentorship of maybe a coach or a club or a technical staff that really isn't that great. And then, you know, you're kind of taking our advice and saying, oh, well, they said it's okay to be on the bench and stuff, but maybe you're just in a terrible situation also. Yeah. So it's super hard. I wish I could just wave the magic wand and everybody can see, okay, this is good for my kid or this is bad for my kid, but the world doesn't work that way.
Yeah, 100%. All right. CyberX Shinobi. He's always tuning in. So thank you, brother. Appreciate the comments.
Ben, that was only one comment. We're never going to get through this episode. That's okay. We could do a multi-parter if we want. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'll maybe choose two more from this episode and then we can move on to something else.
And if you want me to do a quick fire, tell me. I'll do a quick fire.
Colin Reese. Everyone knows this already. Can't just make people want to play soccer. There are tons of parks and schools everywhere in California and Arizona. Public school fields are easy to access in my experience living in Southern California and growing up in Tucson. The actual problem is not enough people interested in playing, although it is popular. Those are Colin Reese's comments.
Sounds very suburban soccer-ish to me. You got to spend more time around the Mexicans, man. You got to spend more time around the Colombians, Peruvians, the Brazilians, the Argentines. It sounds like a very suburban comment, a comment that has been spread far and wide by the media. And I get that. Look, it's that they don't think that they're brainwashed because they're seeing it with their own eyes, right? They see the schools and they see that nobody's playing. But are you going into South Central LA? You know, are you going into the hood parks? Is that what you're seeing? Or are you in Irvine or Mission Viejo school district and walking around? It's not that the kids and there aren't enough people who don't want to play. That's nonsense. We have the largest playing population, I think, in the world, Ben. The stats are out there. I haven't seen them in years, but we have the largest number of registered youth soccer players in the world, okay? Why are they not getting out there? Because, yes, if you're in a suburban environment, they prioritize other things. They prioritize either academics or the families or the parents are just too scared to let the kids go out on their own. And that's why you don't see suburban schools or suburban public parks littered with kids playing pickup or pickup period. So I would encourage Colin to go into the hood and see those parks if there's any brown people playing.
Well, I mean, let's say he does live in a suburban town. Is there some validity to his statement that the actual problem is not enough people are interested in playing, although it is popular? Is there any validity to that statement?
Yeah, the suburban player. Right. The suburban player doesn't have the culture. So yeah, sure. But look, I can also say, hey, go to any suburban area here and you aren't going to see people playing pickup basketball. I've lived in Brea. I live in Fullerton, currently in Irvine. First and foremost, I don't see that many basketball courts anymore or at all. And secondly, when there are basketball courts, I don't see a whole bunch of people, kids playing pickup basketball. Doesn't exist. Where's the basketball culture? Does nobody want to play basketball?
Yeah. Actually, there's a comment in this video that says the U.S. no longer has a pickup basketball culture and the NBA product is suffering.
Yeah. There you have it.
So, yeah, I mean, back in the day, Gary, you would see people playing basketball all the time, no? At the gym, at the local park.
Totally.
24/7.
No, it's a larger scale issue. And we've talked about this last episode, societal issue. Yeah, me growing up, I would also see a lot of people throwing the football around or playing flag football or 5v5 football. That doesn't exist either. I don't see it anymore.
Here's another comment about the suburbia. Flacco Turtles. Sick name. Yes, they are coaching the magic out of soccer. In suburbia, the kids are on schedules 2 hours twice a week and games on the weekend. Tournament or two during the summer and indoor when it gets too cold. They don't have time for pickup games because all the kids on these schedules and you don't see kids running around just being kids anymore. They call the parents who let their kids just go out and find something to do, free roam parents, and it's looked down on. This isn't going to change until our entire culture does.
Yeah, totally, man. Again, they're touching on a broader societal issue, but I'm reminding everybody that this is the string I've been plucking on for years, Benny, that we don't have a soccer problem in this country. We have a broader cultural problem in this country. And they touched on a very important one is kids don't go out and be kids anymore. They're all kind of inside. Parents are terrified. And they're on their screens for most of the day, and they don't go out and experiment and experience the real world and catch some sunlight. So that is a huge issue. And I do agree with this comment. I don't know if there was another comment within that comment, but nothing in there jumped out at me saying you're wrong. Maybe the first sentence, Ben, where they say that they're coaching the creativity out of kids or coaching, like, I think that's nonsense. Okay. I think that creativity, you can't really coach to a large degree. And the creativity is being sucked out of players by the broader societal thing and not the coaching thing.
Right. Is there a way to change that, Gary? Or are we headed down a dark path?
Well, we gotta make America great again. Oh man, I want to inject some humor into our episodes, man. But no, there's a lot of validity to looking at how things were in the past, what was better in the past, in many people's opinions, and kind of say, hey, you know, maybe us as a broader culture society has made some mistakes. We've tried certain things and we were wrong. It's time to go back to how things were 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 70 years ago. And not everything, not at all, but whatever it is that we see is not working, okay, maybe let's go back to what was working. So I think that requires a lot of leadership from the political class, and because the political class kind of runs the media narratives in many respects, and you need the media to kind of corral and steer the population in a certain direction.
Kyrie Owen is not going to be happy about that comment, Gary. He says that he loves the soccer portion of the podcast, but hates the politics. Doesn't need to know your stance on work from home or even Elon Musk. I know your answer, Gary, but I think everybody should hear what you're going to say.
No, that's fine. Cool. There's plenty of cute soccer podcasts out there that talk about the 4-3-3 and 4-4-2 low blocks and mid blocks. And what did Pochettino say today about the national team and Cindy Parlow Cohn, and, you know, we need wingers like Weah instead of wingers like so. Great. There's many clown shows out there that you can tune into. I think what soccer is most missing here, as evidenced by this comment, is that we still do not understand that the social, political, economic, and cultural things, non-soccer things, heavily impact and influence the soccer specific things. And so if you're just an individual parent or player, you need to understand and recognize that those four non-soccer things are heavily impacting your kid and how aligned your kid is with excellence. And so we have to talk about it. It's important. And cool, if you don't like it, that's fine. No problem. Like I said, you can go and listen to the other clown shows. Good.
Yeah, and you always say this, Gary, football is a reflection of society.
Yeah, of course. Look, and I've said a million times to you, Ben, to everybody who's worked with us, to the audience, I actually don't give a fuck about soccer. I don't really care all that much. Yeah, sure, I tune in. Yeah, sure, I've coached. Yeah, sure, I've done a lot of work in the ecosystem. But soccer, for a vast majority of the world's population, is a proxy, a reflection, a way of expressing their social, political, economic, and cultural opinions and leanings. And so that's really what I care about. When I talk about MLS and it being a monopoly and we need to break up the monopoly and because for X, Y, and Z reasons, I'm not saying it exclusively for sporting reasons. The sporting reasons are the least important to me. The reasons I talk about we can't have a monopoly is that it's bad for people. It's bad for economics. It's bad for communities. It's bad for coaches, bad for players, bad for every single touch point in the ecosystem. And that is why I'm fighting. You know, I'm not fighting so that we can develop better center mid. I'm fighting so that we can have opportunities, equal opportunity for all center mids of all everywhere. You know, it's not right that somebody born in Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, and is a phenom, we'll never see the light of day and we'll never see the higher levels because there's no opportunity for you there. And why is there no opportunity? Well, because a monopoly has deemed your community unworthy of having any sort of opportunity of climbing up the ladder and earning their way in the hierarchy. So that's political, that's cultural, that's economic, that's social. That's what I'm going to talk about. That's what I care about. That's what 343 is all about. It's not about a fucking outside back being a better outside back.
You're the hero that American soccer didn't know they needed, Gary.
Oh, Ben, please stop, man. Stop.
All right, Gary, moving on. That's some good comments from that episode. We got a lot of good comments from our episode on Soccer IQ. Stephen Cooper, 2393, says he really enjoyed our discussion on Soccer IQ, but he thinks there's more to consider. Telling kids to watch games is helpful, but many won't know what to look for, so it might not be enough on its own. Soccer IQ is best developed through meaningful exposure to the game, especially unstructured play where kids can explore, make mistakes, and learn naturally. Here's another paragraph, but I'll let you just riff on that first part.
Okay, well, what to look for in games. It's true. If you're just watching soccer games and nobody's there to mentor you or guide you or point things out to you, you're not really going to learn all that much. Maybe it'll take you 5 years to notice one thing because of your natural human ability of pattern matching. But if you have an awesome mentor next to you pointing things out, you can learn those things right away. And you know, here I can plug the 343 masterclass for parents. That's exactly what it's meant to do. It's help the parents discern those moments, and then they can sit with their kids and point those things out for their kids. So we're basically trying to elevate the soccer IQ of parents who can then elevate the soccer IQ of their kids. So that's in the game watching thing for sure. I agree with the comment there. What was the other thing? The other thing was that creativity is best done in unstructured play.
Soccer IQ is best developed through meaningful exposure to the game, especially unstructured play where kids can explore, make mistakes, and learn naturally.
Meaningful unstructured play. Well, first off, it's kind of hard to know what they mean by meaningful.
He says through meaningful exposure to the game.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean? Meaningful exposure to the game. So I can't even comment on that. All I'll say is that any exposure to the game is good exposure. My personal opinion, meaningful exposure to the game goes back to my earlier rant on having a mentor by your side who shows you the meaning and makes it meaningful versus not. Because a lot of people watch a lot of soccer here, Ben, and their soccer IQs are subterranean, okay? and it's because they don't have somebody by their side with a high soccer IQ helping them out. And insofar as the comment about that soccer IQ is best, what is it? Read it again.
Soccer IQ is best developed through meaningful exposure to the game, especially unstructured play where kids can explore, make mistakes, and learn naturally.
Yeah. You know how many players I know had unstructured play outside and within the club environment, completely unstructured? Their soccer IQs are shockingly bad, subterranean, terrible. And it goes back to having proper mentorship. Doesn't have to be formal, doesn't have to be a coach, doesn't have to be a parent. But if you're in an unstructured place, say in pickup games, maybe somebody is taking you under their wing, you know, the kid that's 5 years older and helping you out, or the collective or the environment has a high soccer IQ and they're helping you understand high soccer IQ. I'll give you an example because I'm being a little bit too obtuse. Let's say that your kid is playing pickup soccer with a bunch of other suburban soccer kids with low soccer IQ, and they're just all out there playing pickup. And then take the other case where your kid is playing pickup soccer with a bunch of Argentine, Brazilian, Colombian kids in the barrio, okay? Huge difference. The kid will accumulate soccer IQ in the latter case, and in the former case, you might just end up getting dumber and dumber and dumber.
He also goes on to say, a little guidance can help steer them, but the key is allowing kids to experience the game in its pure form. Watching games works best when paired with specific things to focus on, like how players position themselves or make decisions. It's all about creating the right balance between structure and freedom for them to truly develop.
Yeah, balance is a good word. I'm just going to hang my hat on what I last said of the two scenarios. Go play unstructured play with a bunch of low soccer IQ people. Go play unstructured play with a bunch of high soccer IQ people. They are not the same. Yeah. You will not develop a high soccer IQ playing with low soccer IQ people in an unstructured environment. I don't care what you say.
This is a little random, Gray, but it came to my mind when talking about meaningful exposure to the game. Like, I'd be curious if somebody did a study of, let's take a 12-year-old kid, 12, 13, 14-year-old kid, and you sit them down to, I don't know, watch a Premier League game. Can they go the entire 90 minutes without checking their phone? Or can they actually have meaningful exposure to the game and watch and dissect? Or is it they're watching, they get bored, and they look on the phone? Because at that point, you're really not watching the game at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Look, I don't know because I don't sit with little kids and watch soccer games. So I don't know what it is that they're doing. I imagine that that is indeed occurring. And yeah, if that's occurring, then you aren't learning squat. And maybe that's just how the world works nowadays, and you just can't do anything about that. You know, either your kid is interested in it or they're not interested in it. Yeah. You know, back in the day, I've told this story many a times with Brian and myself. We kind of grew up when VHS was a thing. That's how we would record games. And then we had a whole library of VHS games, World Cup games, club games, whatever it may be. And then we would watch those things diligently and then rewind and play certain plays back again, and then rewind and play and rewind and play and rewind and play. And that's how I think we developed a lot of whatever soccer IQ we may have. A lot of it I credit to that. But we didn't have the distractions of the iPhone, and we didn't have all the distractions that exist now. So that may very well have been our form of distraction, is doing those sorts of things. That may very well have been our form of entertainment, is doing those sorts of things. Was there Nintendo and video games? Yes, but I don't think the games were necessarily as addictive, maybe, as these other things that kids are exposed to now. So I don't have that solution, Ben. Yeah. Maybe that's just the way it is now. And on the bright side, I think there's a massive opportunity for players who are that addicted and hooked to soccer to go far in the game, because most aren't anymore.
Yeah. I remember one time, Gary, I forget which game it was, but we went to like an international friendly game at the Rose Bowl. And it was me and Danny and all his teammates, right? Prieto, Choco, Jacob Barone. We mentioned Jacob Barone in the podcast. And it was so funny, Gary. There was like a fight that broke out in the section, like right next to us. And literally all of us are like turned to watch the fight. And Brian mentions, like, you know, Jacob Barone, instead of watching the fight, this fool didn't care about the fight. This fool is laser focused on the game, you know? So it just goes to show that, like, he cared about the game so much, and a fight couldn't take his attention away. It was all about the game for him, you know? Not to say that like Prieto and Choco didn't have a soccer IQ, but, you know, there's a difference in those moments, you could tell.
No, there was, Jacob had the most commitment of any player that I've ever come across. And in our prior episode, we talked about, or you mentioned, oh, there's a lot of players that fall through the cracks here in the States. And I kind of said, no, I don't agree with you, Benny. There aren't cracks in the United States. There are canyons in the United States. And the players are stuck at the bottom of the canyons. And we have enormous amounts of talent that could have been pros, excellent pros with the player attributes that the global community likes. There's plenty of players that could be pros now that aren't. And there will be plenty of players that could be pros in the future that aren't going to be pros because of the canyons that exist here. And Jacob Barone is one such player. So, and I said to myself, oh, you know, the opposition will just say, Gary, shut the fuck up. Who are these players then? Name some names. And I said, look, if I name names, you're going to say, who the F is that? And then that's the end of the discussion. Yeah. And who the F is that? Exactly. Because they weren't elevated. Obviously, you don't know who they are. So here's a name. Jacob Barone is one such name. Exceptional, remarkable, amazing six. And he absolutely should have played Major League Soccer. Without any question, he would have been one of the best in Major League Soccer. Period. End of story. This country let him down.
People might even say, like, well, because they don't know Jacob Barone, but he played 4 years at Penn State, no? So, I mean, the opportunity was there, but MLS overlooked him. He fell through the canyon.
Yeah, he played, it was 1 or 2 years at UC Davis, and then he went to Penn State. That's right. I don't remember if his coach was Bob Warming then at Penn State. I think it was. Bob Warming is very well-known, very revered, and I highly respect him, and an awesome human being as well. But it's not up to the college coach as to whether you get to play in MLS or not.
Even some people may not know the story about Choco and how, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this guy was in the running for, I forget what the name of the award is, but like the best college soccer player. And a team ended up wanting to draft him, but they didn't even know that, you know, his birthplace wasn't in the U.S. So is that what happened? Is that why it fell through? And then he just never made it again?
Well, so Choco, Jose Gomez, another outrageously talented player of the characteristics that we are always harp on here, and of the characteristics that are highly valued in Spain, incredibly technical and tactical maestro in the center of the field. Yeah, he was a Hermann Trophy finalist. He was one of the last three. For folks who don't know, that's basically the Heisman Trophy equivalent in soccer. And yeah, man, he wasn't drafted. He went to the combine the draft combine and wasn't drafted. I think like in the so-called supplemental draft, like way down the chain, somebody, I think it was Toronto. My memory fails me at times. Toronto said, okay, come on over. And he went on over there and did like 2 weeks of preseason with Toronto FC. And at the end, they kind of said, no thanks. And that was it. That's Jose Gomez.
It's funny. I remember as a kid watching that draft and like, obviously, okay, Choco was the top three finalist. So I'm thinking that like, I'm watching the first round, like, oh, Choco might be the third pick. The third pick comes fourth. I'm like, what the fuck's happening? And it never came. I was on my phone watching it in class. I'm like, what's going on? Choco's not getting drafted.
No, it's unbelievable. So, Jonathan Prieto as well. Yeah. Jonathan Prieto, exceptional left-footed attacking midfield talent. Nobody knew who he was. Nobody cared. And, you know, we kind of helped open the door for him to be seen with the Seattle Sounders back when Ziggy Schmidt was the head coach. And Ziggy, you know, kind of liked him, kind of recognized his talent to a certain degree. But when the rubber met the road, it was kind of like between him and another trialist who was named Lamar Neagle. And Lamar Neagle was picked. Lamar Neagle, the player profile is big, fast, strong, really fast guy. Okay. And the tactical maestro, midfield maestro, was not picked. This other Lamar Neagle kid was picked. And Lamar Neagle went on to have a handful of MLS seasons and then fell out and never became anything important or great. But that's just another example of another technical maestro being said no to.
Yeah.
We're getting away from the comments, Ben, but that's fine. I don't think the audience will care. That's fine. And I certainly don't care because I think a lot of these stories need to be aired out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, here's a good positive comment, Gary, from Jarhead Jr. We had a game on Thursday where we lost 1-2, but we probably possessed the ball 75% of the time. The ball was in the opponent's half maybe 80% of the time. They got maybe 5 shots on our goal. Well, we took at least 20. We still suck at scoring, but we crossed the half every build out. Our opponent did not cross it once, building out of the back, and they scored on 2 boot the ball over the kids' heads plays. I wanted to share this result with you guys because afterwards, their coach shook my hand and said, man, that did not feel like a win. I'm a member of your 7v7 group, and the structured highlighted in the program works. Thought you'd like to hear that, Gary.
No, it's cool. It's always good to get positive feedback too, because it gives us energy to know that people are being helped. And then it's right. Like, okay, we need to help more people. And so we get to work even harder. So awesome. I appreciate the comment and keep going, man. Keep going, because obviously you're doing something right. You're just confronting the issue that every single coach confronts across the world at every single level, including the professional level, which is the final third. So you possess all game long, but in the final third, you know, you don't finish. It's tough to finish sometimes. It's the hardest thing to do in all of football. And that's why the strikers and the wingers are the most expensive players in all of football. You know, you want a number 9 that puts the ball in the back of the net, because obviously that is incredibly valuable. And not everybody has that Erling Haaland up top or Lewandowski up top to do that. So you're not doing anything wrong. You're just experiencing what the vast preponderance of all coaches who are doing things right experience, which is we possessed all game, we dominated the opponent all game, and they get 2 counterattacks, score on us, and we lose the game. So it happens, man. Head up.
Another positive comment. This one's about the masterclass. Signed up for the masterclass for over a month now. Great content. Slowly digesting and trying to implement the course with my son. The weekly pods given additional context and thoughts and material. I'm loving it. Keep those rants coming. So some good feedback there.
Awesome, man. There certainly is a ton of content in the masterclass. It takes a long time for every module, every lesson. There's a lot of depth there that you can spend an eternity on. So it's a lifelong process, no doubt. I continue learning things myself, as I'm sure everybody else does.
I think this will be a good one to talk about.
Oh boy. Is this a toxic one?
No, it's not so much toxic, just a friendly suggestion.
Let me guess, that the person used their real name, right?
No, I don't think so. Epoch Film and Photo.
Yeah, it's a joke, Ben. Nobody uses their real name who talks shit, but go ahead.
Hey guys, I want you to first know that I absolutely love your content, your podcasts, and your learning platform. It has helped me tremendously with my team. I love listening to your podcast and I play it regularly in my house. And you are entitled to use whatever language you want to use. But do you guys really have to use the F-bomb every 3 or 4 seconds? can't really play the podcast aloud around my kids because they're dropping the F-bomb so much. And it seems like an easy thing just not to do. Considering this is for, you know, teaching kids, I would love to just be able to listen to it while we're hanging out. But I kind of can't do that because you all say the F-word so freaking much. I feel like you might be shutting off an audience like myself. Down in the South, we need this education and we'll pay good money for it. Folks down here won't like the language and it's a big market you might be shutting out.
Got it. No, I appreciate the comment. And we've talked about this over the years, Ben. We've talked about, oh man, we should, you know, stop saying so many F-bombs and sensitive words like that. And yeah, look.
You're passionate, Gary. I mean,
it's just, there's just so many responses to this. One is, what's most important to me is being real and authentic and trying my best not to filter myself. I want to be free. And that's kind of why I started the blog, and that's kind of why I started 343, and that's why we started this YouTube channel, is having our own platform where we can say and do as we please. That's number one. Number two, I can completely appreciate being diplomatic and being filtered and being more classy, because that's better for business. And I know this, Ben, and I've said it a million times. I could have made 10 times the amount, we'd be 10 times larger, have a larger audience, 10 times the profitability, 10 times everything, you name it. If we had gone down the classic route with guardrails on, okay, and said the right things. I just won't do it. I just won't do it, Ben. The other thought I have is, look, I teach physics. Guess what? In physics, I'm not saying fuck this, fuck that, every other sentence, okay? Because that, it's just a different environment. You understand? Like in soccer, in competitive sport, this is also the language of competitive sport. I'm not saying that's an excuse, that's a reason, but there's a grain of truth to that. In competitive sport, there's F-bombs all over the place, okay? And there's all kinds of more serious stuff than F-bombs. So I'm just going to roll with it, man. That's what's inside of me. That's how it's going to come out. Once in a while, I try to restrain myself. But I think this is what 343 is, man. There's a comment in there that I disagree with too, with the commenter, which is, he says, this is a brand or a show or a product for kids. Right. No, it's not. This is something for parents. This is something for the adults, for coaches, for the adults in the room. This is not for kids. This is not meant to be played for kids.
Right.
Now, if you go into our products, like the 343 Masterclass, there's no F-bombs or shit or anything bad there because, yeah, you might want to show your kids a video of how to do a certain type of exercise against the wall, and it's very clean and very proper.
I think he can, you know, appreciate what you're trying to say.
But like, Ben, I don't care, Ben. I'm just going to be who I am, dude. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, that's awesome too. You're never going to satisfy everybody. It's fine. Yeah. I accept it.
I like this comment here. Yeah, moving on. This one's from our episode, Balancing Winning and Development in Youth Soccer. Having a man-child is a curse. Coaches feel they are good because they're winning, but once they lose that talent, they won't develop any talent. It's something that we talked about in a couple episodes ago. It's like, it was in the Soccer IQ episode where I said, you know, a player can get away with scoring 10, 11 goals in a game, and they may think that, you know, they're phenomenal, but at the end of the day, they're not developing a soccer IQ if they're not being properly coached in the right environment.
Is the comment talking about the coach or the player?
I think he's talking about in like the context of the team. He says, having a man child is a curse. Coaches feel they are good because they're winning, but once they lose that talent, they won't develop any more talent. So
I see. I guess yes.
Kind of towards the coach.
Yeah, it's towards the coach. Yeah, I would agree with the general sentiment there. And what's unfortunate too is that the parents get fooled because the team wins because of the man child, and then you think the coach is good or the club is good and you want your kid to play for that team. And it's not the case. But sometimes there are very good coaches who are doing the right things, and the man-child is just the man-child and scores and wins, and that's great for everybody involved in many respects. So it comes down to discernment, Ben. Now, if the man-child leaves, there's no question that the team is going to suffer from the win-loss column, no question, but it doesn't necessarily mean that whoever the coach of that team was wasn't a good coach. It certainly gives the existing coach the incentive to not have to work as hard to develop players because you don't have to. Yeah, and you can just win. And I would recommend, and honestly, look, let's not slander man-childs too much because they can be quite helpful in in the following sense as well. If you're a great coach or you're trying to do great work and the right things, it's awesome. I would recommend get yourself a man-child so that you can win games. And then that enables you to continue doing your good work. Because if you're not winning games, guess what? This parent that just made a comment, I'm not pointing to them specifically. I'm using them as an archetype. They might revolt against you if you're not winning games. And then all of a sudden you aren't the coach anymore, or you're put under so much pressure that you can't do the right things anymore. Or you might be asked, oh, why the F are we doing this 4v rondo all season long? Like, move on to something else. Like, what the F? Like, and you're going to have to maybe bow down and say, oh man, maybe I should change it up here because I'm losing every game and the parents aren't happy. So get yourself man children, coaches out there.
Yeah, I think the hard part though, Gary, is for, you know, the not so good coaches, and they get those players and they have winning teams. And those are the coaches that get elevated into the, you know, the ECNL teams or the higher level teams. So it can be frustrating for coaches out there that are actually trying to do good work. And some, you know, some coaches struggle to recruit players, or maybe if you are in a suburban town, there are no man-childs in that town. But to your point, I mean, if you can get those types of players and you can foster growth in them and the right way to play, I think that's huge.
But look, going back to the commenter, they have a good point. If you have a player or two or three like that, it does hide coaching incompetence, because the results hide coaching incompetence. And it doesn't happen just at the youth level. If you're at the pro level, and this is, by the way, why there's such a huge bias towards big, fast, and strong at the professional levels here in the States, more so than elsewhere, is because it masks coaching and technical staff and club incompetence. Just get the bigger, faster, stronger guy for central midfield, where they can just win duels and grudge matches and tackle matches and all that stuff. That's easy to do. You don't have to teach anything. The player just does it. But if you have a technical player in there, let's say you have a Xavi Hernandez in there, who isn't going to win tackles or headers or anything at all, it requires a lot of competence, patience, expertise, to leverage that player's qualities to make the team play and be successful. So what's the easy route to take? The easy route to take is, fuck, like, let's just get the big, fast, strong guy who can just run around versus the technical guy, because I don't know how to teach the technical guy or train the team to work around the technical guy or leverage the technical guy.
All right, Gary, let's do like a rapid fire one. This guy has like four comments within
Jesus.
One comment.
One at a time, because my brain doesn't function that well.
Yeah. All right. Warner Brothers 4241. Great podcast. I enjoy listening. I have a few questions for you. I hope that they entice mature, respectful, and healthy dialogue. So in this episode, balancing winning and development in youth soccer, you mentioned, right, how the game is supposed to be played. Look at any pro game. So that was one of your comments. He says, which country, which culture?
Every country, every culture. If you look at the champions of their domestic league or whatever, whoever are the best in that country or culture, look at how they play. And 9 times out of 10, they are going to be the team with possession of the football and dominating play through owning the football.
Later in the episode, you mentioned a comment, do the right thing. And I think that was in terms of keeping the ball or keeping possession for the team. He says, is this your opinion on the best style, or is this the only style you have been exposed to?
I've been exposed to all styles, and we actually leverage all styles. Ben, you've played for Brian and you've seen us work in many respects, and we will bunker and counter when the moment requires it. And we will do all kinds of things. We'll do man marking. We'll drift away from 4-3-3. We'll do 4 whatever the fuck it is, Ben. It doesn't matter. We're completely practical and adaptable, but we know, I'm going to say for myself, it's not the best style. It is what wins. It is the way to play the game, is to have the ball. It is not to piss the ball away. Again, look anywhere in the world, look at what the best teams in the world have been and are and will be. And the champions, the most successful ones by and large, are the ones who dominate and hold the football. Period. End of story. And look, You can run a thought experiment if it's too hard to really digest. Run a thought experiment. Think about maybe we all complain about the U.S. national team or Division I college soccer. Everybody complains about Division I college soccer, kick and chase, run, all this sort of stuff, no possession, none of this. Okay, thought experiment. Get that Division I college team that you think doesn't play possession football and have them play against a high school soccer team. Okay. You know what you're going to see without giving any instructions to the players at all? You know what you're going to see? You're going to see the college team knocking the ball around and holding possession. And then when they see an opportunity, they go at you and they score. That's what you're going to experience without training them in possession. Why? Because that is what football is. You own the football. Your opponent does not own the football.
He also says, if we all played the same way, would it be exciting?
We can't all play the same way because there are mismatches. And so that's when you have to adapt. So the high school soccer team shouldn't be trying to play out of the back against the Division I college soccer team. If I had the high school soccer team in that instance, I would train all week and say, listen, we're going to bunker. This is exactly how we're going to bunker. This is their attacking midfielder. We're going to hack. Your responsibility is to hack him to pieces. You know, I'll tell David to go and hack that guy and never leave him out of the sight. We're going to bunker. And then look, under this particular circumstance, we're going to counterattack. And this is how we're going to counterattack. And I train it all day long. So of course, everybody's not going to play the same way. That's why you see such a mixture. And I'll go on a further rant. That's why MLS is unsophisticated and doesn't really work very well because there is enforced parity. They try to make all the teams of equal strength. You know, they try to make everything the same. And so all of a sudden, what are we watching? We're watching just the roll of the roulette wheel. And it's just random who wins and who loses. And you don't see a huge diversity or diversity of playing styles at all because everybody's equal strength. You don't see the incredible bunkering counter tactic. You don't see the incredible possession domination tactic because everybody's the same. So that's what makes it boring, which the commenter actually mentions.
He says in that same sentence, if we all played the same way, would it be exciting? I happen to find Happy Gilmore highly entertaining.
Dude, when did I watch that movie, man? I don't know. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But I mean, to that statement, it has some validity because you mentioned in a couple episodes ago about how, you know, the top, they want us, especially in the US, they want it to be proper and, you know, follow the rules, but that's not what Happy Gilmore does. You know which comment I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, no, I do. I know exactly what you're saying. And so cool. Let's take it away from the field. The same thing applies. You know, they want everybody to behave the same way. They want everybody to talk the same way. The prior commenter doesn't want me to talk about politics. The other commenter doesn't want me to say fuck. You know, and they want everything sanitized and clean and the same, and that makes it boring. So another reason why it's boring here in the States is because we have these super tight guardrails that you can't violate. Nah, I'm violating it. F it. This is what spices things up.
His last comment, I know it was supposed to be quick fire, but that's who are we to say what the best standard is when picking one style of play? This assumes that we are the experts in all styles of play.
This was asked and answered already. This is just so misguided, man. It's just, okay, if you have the superior roster, if you're Real Madrid, are you ever going to say, oh, man, we're playing against the LA Galaxy next week. Let's bunker. Let's do a, 4-5-1, and let's bunker in a super low block all game long, and let's pick very specific moments as to when we're going to counterattack and try to score. Why does Real Madrid not do that? Why? I mean, if all styles are equally valid and everything is, you know, cool to do, and who says what's right to do and what's wrong to do? I'm not saying it's wrong for Real Madrid to do that, but are they going to do that? Is anybody in their right mind going to do that? No, you are going to own the football. I mean, how dense are we to not understand this concept?
I feel like some haters in the comments might say, look at Man City and their struggles in the past 12 games and their style is a possession-based style.
It's not a guarantee. This right. is football. This isn't 2+2=4. There's randomness in football. So of course, results are not guaranteed. It's a probability situation. The probability that you're going to be successful is much, much higher if you are the one who owns the football versus your opponent. And by the way, of course, there's a whole bunch of injury issues and people missing on Man City.
This is a good comment, Gary. And Cortez, love the show. I agree with many of your points, but I'm going to point out the reality of coaching youth soccer, U9 and under. Of the 12 kids on my 7v7 team, 7 of the kids on my roster never played organized soccer before this season. We struggle to complete passes in general, let alone string 5 to 10 together. A unless it's amongst three of the kids I've coached for three seasons already.
Oh, I don't even know what you want me to respond to. Is there a question? I think they're just making a statement as if.
Right. Well, I mean, this is something that you talk about all the time. It's like with teams like this, especially if you have players that have never played before and you're sticking to the 3-4-3 methodology, you're going to see results a lot faster if you're offering them some type of structure. And I, to his point, can be difficult with those players, but their level of progress is going to happen much faster if you are consistent with it. Wouldn't you agree?
It's the level of improvement of a player, or the rate of improvement, sorry, the rate of improvement of a player will be more visible and much faster the lower the level, for sure. In this particular circumstance where you have players who have never played soccer before, I will remind them that I also said that the context was you won't be successful in competitive matches if you're completely outclassed player pound for pound, player for player with the other team. No matter what methodology you're trying to incorporate, you are going to lose if you run it. Like Brian could take this team that was just described and play in a competitive circuit against a team of good soccer players who have played for many, many years, and Brian will lose the game. And it's not just Brian, Pep Guardiola will lose that game too. Everybody in the world will lose that game. So let's be cautious and careful as to the context, first and foremost. But they will definitely improve at a very fast rate if they are kind of absorbing the information, committed to it, and the coach has to be committed to it as well. If you abandon the methodology, if you abandon bringing them along, then it's going to take longer.
Barry, I think we're going to have to do it part two on this episode. So many good comments.
Cool, man. I'm always down, and hopefully people will comment on this one and see how they like it. I kind of like it because it fleshes out a lot of things that maybe we didn't cover in prior episodes. So let's do a part two. Let's plan on it. But I would be curious as to what people think of doing a Q&A like that.
Gary, how does promotion and relegation tie into all of these comments?
No, well, brilliant question. Promotion relegation ties, this is a perfect illustration of why promotion relegation is awesome. Because everybody has the opportunity to comment and critique and say what they want in our comment section, right? The lack of promotion relegation would be, I am an authoritarian and YouTube is an authoritarian, and only comments that are nice to us and completely agree with us make it through the filter and are shown to the world and are addressed. That would be a monopoly and lack of promotion relegation. Here, it's open. Go for it. You guys can do whatever you want. It would be awesome if we had it in soccer too.
Love it. So yeah, I mean, there you go. Everybody, you heard it here. Whatever you want to say, speak your truth.
Yeah, sometimes if you're too toxic, though, we'll pull that one back. You know, this is supposed to be a kid's show. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football, while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.